I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're going to start off a little bit unusually here. I just wanted to mark the a personal remark on the passing of Cokie Roberts today, this morning. She was one of the founding mothers, considered one of the founding mothers of NPR, along with Susan Stamberg and Maura Liasson. Back in 1989, when I was starting out in radio, I was a guest resident at NPR, and I got to meet her, and she was very supportive. And I just wanted to say that she was one of the ones who broke so many glass ceilings and paved the way for women to be in radio at a time when women's voices were considered not authoritative enough to be a reporter, a journalist, or on the radio. So Cokie Roberts at 75 has passed, and I just wanted to say she will be missed a lot. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, and it is membership drive time at KBOO at Stage and Studio. And I guess maybe because I, you know, was thinking about 1984, I was kind of reminiscing about the 80s. So I just wanted to, you know, sort of connect the dots here. I'm excited about the guests and the giveaways we're going to be offering today to support KBOO, your community radio station. First up, we have Damaso Rodriguez, Artistic Director of Artist Repertory Theater, to talk about the adaptation of 1984 by George Orwell, as well as the whole season. And then later on, we're going to have Jessica Wallenfels, director and actor Barbie Wu of The Wolves from Sarah Dillap, I believe, at Portland Playhouse. And it's a timely Pulitzer Prize finalist play, and it's focusing on a young female soccer team, plus so many gifts. Oh, yes, so many thank you gifts for the membership drive donated by Artist Rep, Portland Playhouse, Kohlrab Theater, Coho Productions, as well as a book giveaway. And I'm excited, too, about this. Renee Denfield's sequel to The Child Finder. It's called The Butterfly Girl. She's a Portland author, and it's going to debut October 1st on Stage and Studio before her reading at Powell's. But you could win an advance copy right now, today, on Stage and Studio, so stay tuned. Well, you know, Artist Repertory Theater kicked off its new season. Yeah, just this weekend, with an original play based on the iconic novel 1984 by George Orwell. And waiting so patiently in the wing right now with me in the KBOO studio right now is Artistic Director Damaso Rodriguez. Hey, thanks for being here.
Hey, glad to be here.
On this Membership Drive edition. And you're the director of 1984. And it's a new play by, am I pronouncing this right, Robert Icke?
Yes.
And Duncan MacMillan. And it's about a dystopian society known as Oceania. And Winston Smith is a cog in the social system, and he dares to think for himself, and that's a crime, a thought crime. You know, 1984 was such an iconic novel. You know, we have all these terms now that we have actually, we don't think about anymore. And it, you know, there was a ministry of truth, there was a thought police, and it really has impacted a lot, especially now, of how we view the government and government control, as well as media control. Do you want to speak to your personal connection to 1984?
Sure. Well, it was written in 1949, and, you know, when you, I don't know when I was exposed to the novel. It must have been, you know, high school. For as far as I'm concerned, it's sort of always been there. And I remember really vividly in 1984, I was 10 years old, and Apple had the famous commercial debuting the Apple Macintosh.
That's right.
And it was, you sort of saw this sort of the idea of Big Brother, the big head on the screen.
It was black and white.
Yes, and all these drones. And then the hammer was thrown at the screen and it shattered it, et cetera. And so it's just sort of been in my consciousness since I was a kid. And so many dystopian films, I think, are influenced by 1984. But in revisiting the novel for this project, I was struck by how it's really not, has nothing to do with the kind of sci-fi that we associate with dystopia now. It's really a socio-political commentary. It's filled with irony, and yes, it's shocking how much Orwell got right about the world. You know, in the world of 1984, in his novel, everyone has what he describes as a little black plaque on their wall, which is a screen, And that little black plaque looks an awful lot like your iPhone.
yes.
and you're aware in this society of Oceania that you can be observed at any moment. And the truth is, the technology exists to do that right now. We just kind of live in denial and hope that it hasn't been weaponized against us.
Well, especially now with face recognition, oh, yeah. You know, we won't be able to get away from anything, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be watched. So Big Brother is watching,
Big Brother
right?
is watching.
Which is a theme, you know, that it pervades us right now, definitely, you know.
And while technology is certainly part of it, and surveillance culture is part of the novel, I think it's really about one of the most potent elements is how truth can be manipulated and how subjective, essentially in the world of the book, objective truth is gone. It's only what the party says is true. And the protagonist in 1984, Winston Smith, starts to feel like he's mad because he sees the world differently than everyone else around him. He feels like a minority of one. And he sort of tries to resist over the course of the book. And so that's one of the things that I was surprised in reading it was he finds someone who sees the world like him. They get into a love affair, and they both try to fight the system together. And so it has this romantic thriller component running through it, which I just had forgotten about.
Yeah, it's been forever since I read it, but I do remember when 1984 did roll around, you know, the year, you kind of went, oh, okay, so not all of that happened. But, you know, maybe the year isn't important.
That's
it's
right.
Like... it's now.
That's right.
1984 is actually a concept.
It is. And one of the questions in the play is, there's this question asked over and over again, where are you now? It's a theme that runs through it. But the truth is, as you watch the play, it's existing in multiple realities. It's existing both in the circumstances of the novel 1984, but it's theater, right? So it's always happening in the present. Theater is always happening in that room full of people right now in 2019 Portland. There's another device in this adaptation, which it's the only adaptation in the history of the 70-year-old novel to dramatize the appendix.
Yeah, tell us about that. What is that?
Yeah, so if early in the novel, there is a reference to the language of newspeak, which is a language that Big Brother and the party is trying to create to eventually eradicate all original thought. And that the way to eradicate thought is by stripping the language to as few words as possible. And so there's a footnote early in the novel, which is really unusual for a work of fiction to have a footnote like this. So if you turn to the back of the book, you'll find the principles of newspeak, and appendix. And it implies that everything that you're reading in the novel is a thing of the past. It's looking at it from at least the year 2050. And so that kind of...
that helps a lot for the production, doesn't it?
Yeah. So these adaptors have taken that adaptation and dramatized it. So there's a company of people on stage when the play begins, which you would not expect in an adaptation of 1984. And they're reading what appears to be the book 1984. And talking about Oceania as if that Big Brother society is no more. So
right.
There's a little sliver of hope in that as you're watching the play. And then the play just sort of blends time and sort of shifts back to the circumstances of the book.
It's a great framing,
yeah.
You know, to start off a play because it's not what you expect it to be.
That's right.
And, you know, it's also at Imago Theater across the street from KABU right now.
That's right.
You're kind of like, you've got a big stage there to play with, but also how are you adapting to that stage?
Well, the reason we're at Imago is because our home space at 15th and Morrison is being renovated. It's going to take us a couple of years out of the building. So we're bouncing around the city calling ourselves ART on tour, kicking things off at Imago, and what we've done is we have reconfigured the theater space, which is more often than not set up with the audience on one side. More traditionally, we have the audience on two sides, which is really appropriate.
So stadium kind of,
Stadium style or runway style with the strip stage in the middle, right? And for this play, which is about, you know, people watching, it's a surveillance culture. There's the metaphor of the audience watching
audience is Big Brother.
That's
essentially.
Right. That's right.
Well, it sounds very exciting and intense, I have to say. I mean, that book is not an easy, you know, easy read. And sometimes it's a little bit harder when you see it in person, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much more visceral and real.
It's visceral. It's intense. You know, when the last third of the book and the play deals with the act of brainwashing and the sort of torture that's required of that.
Yeah, and so we a little bit of a warning there.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah. It is an intense experience. Right. This adaptation started in 2014 in the UK, went to the West End in London, eventually onto Broadway. We're one of the first original productions of it. And yeah, it's meant to make you uncomfortable, but I think there's something ultimately really positive about everyone getting together and hearing these ideas stated out loud, and you feel less alone knowing that even in 1949 we had these same anxieties, right? Because there's nothing in the book that is ultimately not hasn't happened somewhere at some time, right?
And is happening.
Is happening right now.
Yeah. I'm DMA Roberts talking with artistic director Damasel Rodriguez about 1984 by George Orwell, running through October 6th at Artist Rep. And you can pick up a pair of tickets right now to 1984 and any other plays, which we'll talk about later in Artist Rep season, by calling 1-877-500-5266. I'm DMA Roberts with artistic director Damasel Rodriguez, and we've been talking about his production of 1984, adapted from the novel by George Orwell, which is just open this weekend, and it's running through October 6th. And what I think is just great is veteran actor Chris Harder portrays the main character, Winston Smith. I think it'd be really difficult to portray Winston Smith because of all he goes through, and you have a really impressive cast. I mean, but that must be a challenging role for him, you know? Yeah. I know he can do it, but it's just, it's not easy.
No, it's not. And, you know, Chris is just an extraordinary actor, and if you follow theater in Portland, you know him because he's been doing theater here for over 20 years. The role of Winston Smith, the way the play is structured, never leaves the stage. So he's on for the entire 100 continuous minutes of the play.
And wow.
Yeah, he goes through everything you can go through on stage in terms of sort of this visceral performance. But he's a really big-hearted actor. I think one of the things that's really important in any production of 1984 is you have to care about Winston Smith and his plight. And I think you do, and you get really drawn into him. And you hope he'll win, even if you know
that
the novel ends.
Yeah, if you've read the novel, for those who haven't read the novel, then, you know, perhaps it's like, oh, I hope it works, hope it works. But that's part of the, I don't know, that's part of the drama. But, you know, that you really want to fight for the protagonist.
That's right.
You know, the hero. You want to give a shout out to the rest of the cast?
Yeah,
because it's
sure.
a really good ensemble.
Oh, it's a really great ensemble. Actually, I have 13 folks on stage for this show.
I know Sarah Hennessy's
yes, Sarah
in
Hennessy
it.
Sarah Hennessy is in it. Alan Noss, who was
and the great Alan Noss.
A Portland acting, really Northwest acting legend.
And longtime predecessor of Artist Repertory Theater, artistic director.
Artistic director of Artist Rep for 25 years. Yeah. Just an incredible actor. And he plays the pivotal role of O'Brien, which, you know, may or may not be Winston's ally in the play, and he really takes over the production for the final 30 minutes. It is just a tour
boy.
De force.
Oh boy.
So we have Claire Rigsby, who plays the character of Julia, which it becomes Winston's partner in
love interest
and
possibly
yeah,
spy.
Or she may be thought police. We don't know. And we have great, some of our ensemble resident artists, like Michael Mendelsohn, John San Nicolas.
And Ken Yoshikawa.
Who's making his Artist Rep debut, has this really interesting role of Martin, who is a character who's much more than he seems on stage. So, you know, as I talk about the play, I realize it's filled with all these sort of, again, there's a thriller component, there's a noir component to it. And then all the while, every line rings out as if it's you know, you just read about it on Twitter today, you know.
Yeah, it really does. You know, we don't want to give away too many spoilers, but, you know, it is a novel that's still taught in schools. I hope that it's still taught in schools. Do you have any idea?
Oh, it is. Yeah,
okay,
someone's reading it somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, what commentary are you personally making on today's world with this play, 1984?
We wanted to start our season, like with any play we do, we always asking why this play, why now? But I think we wanted to start with something that was as relevant to people's lives as this election cycle is we're in, or the causes that we're all fighting for. And so somehow this is a piece of theater does that. So I've been asked, you know, how are you commenting on this administration, et cetera? What have you done to put it into the context of this moment? You don't have to do anything. That's why 1984 is a classic, and that's why it's always seems to be about the current moment. You know, when I read the book and the play most recently, I immediately struck by. So I'm Cuban American. This is exactly right. Like the stories I was told growing up, right. of family members being a part of first the positive side of the Cuban Revolution, which it seemed like it was going to be a great thing for everyone, and then the sort of corrupt distortion of what may have been good ideas, and then sort of the corruption of power, and that's another element in this play. So I just wanted to do something that. Was again just sort of vital and relevant. And
it sounds personal to you.
It's personal
because of family history too.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. But I find that we're having post show discussions after the show, and we're hearing that a lot from folks. That there's nothing in this novel that it hasn't happened. It doesn't relate directly to people right now.
That's unfortunate to hear in some respects, but I guess, you know, if you don't bring out the truth, if you don't bring it out, I mean, you know, so much of what we doubt now regarding news and journalism falls into this too, because, you know, we have to have the muckrakers. We have to have people who are really committed to getting the truth out there, yeah. and committed to having people think for themselves.
That's
you
right.
Know? I mean, and we're lost if we don't.
Right. And I think we have to get together and listen together and sort of feel that the sort of unity of even knowing the truth together. And so as dark as this place seems, I think there's something just really positive about how you feel when it's over.
Well, Artists Repertory Theater presents 1984, an adaptation based on the George Orwell book. And the show runs through October 6th at Imago Theater, located at 17 East 8th Avenue in Portland, across the street from KBOO. More info at artistrep.org or stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio, where there will be the podcast later on today of this interview. I believe we still have a pair of tickets to Artist Rep season, and so many other tickets to offer from other theaters, and Renee Denfield's soon-to-be-released book, The Butterfly Girl. You can get an advance copy by calling 1-877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. You know, Damaso, you're used to raising money, right?
Yes.
You're a nonprofit leader. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is your best pitch for especially arts coverage on KBOO right now and on Stage and Studio? What's your best pitch for us?
Well, my pitch is just that this is really vital. And if it wasn't for sources like KBOO, we wouldn't have arts coverage, because journalism in general has been commercialized, right? It's all about selling advertisements. And the result has been that we used to have all of our newspapers have full-time arts critics, and now they don't in cities around the country. And we just don't have the coverage we used to. So sometimes it feels like when you put out a piece of work in the world, it kind of can happen in a vacuum if it wasn't for places like KBOO. And all of our arts organizations start over every year with their own need to build audience and fundraise, and so we're constantly needing to get the word out. So this
and
is
that's
vital.
The same with KBOO, you yeah. know. And honestly, that's why, you know, so many people who are doing arts coverage now, including myself, do it as volunteers.
Yeah.
You
well,
know,
thank you.
For the commitment. You know, so I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio, and I'm here with Damaso Rodriguez, who is the artistic director of Artist Repertory Theater. And before, in the time remaining, we'd like to do some shout outs for the rest of your season, because you're directing three. This is insane, Damaso,
yes.
But you are you're directing three shows in a row. How does that happen?
It's not common. I often will direct two or three shows in a season, but I think with so much uncertainty, we needed some time to get good at producing on the road, right? So we've been accustomed for 22 years of having the sets built.
So you're the pilot
theater.
Tour director,
right? And of course, invariably there are bumps along the way and a lot of learning. So sometimes it's just like I want to get in there.
Yeah,
and,
it's hard with a new space and, you know, a whole new neighborhood and all that stuff.
Yeah. That, and I just love these plays. And sometimes the sequence of the plays is not entirely up to the producer. It has to do with the playwright, especially when we're so often working with new work. And so we had the chance to do, just right after 1984, our next production is called La Ruta by Isaac Gomez. And La Ruta opens in early November. Opening night is November 8th. It starts previews on November 2nd. And we're only the second production of this play, and it is set in Ciudad Juárez, which is essentially on the Mexico side of the border in a greater metropolitan
in
El Paso. Yeah.
Really? Oh, my God. That's one of the most... Oh, okay. So it is.
It's that metro area.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, this is a play centered around... Really, the fact that women have been disappearing...
They have been since 1993.
That's right. Yeah. And just it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women through the years on their way and back home from U.S.-owned factories. And the play, what's so beautiful about it is that it's six women in the cast. There's a lot of traditional Mexican folk music in telling the story. And you really get to know... these women, these Mexican women from Ciudad Juárez, as just great characters, fully rounded characters. They're funny. They have really complex character arcs. And, you know, I tell you, when the tragedy in El Paso happened earlier this year, I just was struck by how that still, you hear about stories like this in the news, but the people at the center of the story are often still anonymous to you. You only know them based on the statistics or the tragedy itself. And so this play, I hope, will... I mean, I've learned a lot by working on it already. Isaac, the playwright, grew up in El Paso and has interviewed women through the years for this story. And so that's what we're following up with.
And that's November 2nd through December 1st. And then after that, you're doing a co-directing with Luann Schooler, and it's The Strange Undoing of Prudentia Hart.
That's right. We're going to lighten things up a little bit. That'll be around the holidays. That's that play is, we're performing it at the Tiffany Center, which is in a big ballroom. And essentially, the story is set in a pub.
I don't know that area.
That's right across from where Artist Rep is.
Oh, really?
It's on
Tiffany
Morris
Center.
And Tiffany Center. And it's usually like, there are proms held there and big public
it's
events.
It's not where the Portland Revels are, the
they,
Christmas
they
Revels?
They often have been there.
Okay, all right.
And so this play, people will eat pub food, drink whiskey and beer, and it's basically all written in verse, and there's tons of songs.
Oh, it is
in
a
it.
Scottish folklore.
That's right.
Yes.
And it centers around an academic, Prudentia Hart, who studies the border ballads from the 18th century. And she ends up taking a journey on a wintry night and may or may not
lovely.
Meet the devil.
Wild romp through Scottish ballads.
That's right.
Yes. Oh, good. And that's November 30th through January 5th. Okay. So, so have some grog and ale and mead and, you know, see a show, right? I don't think we have time for the rest of the season. Well, actually, let's mention one more. Schoolgirls or the African Mean Girls play, co-production with Portland Center Stage at the Armory, and that's directed by Lava Alapai, and that's January 18th through February 16th. Just a couple sentences about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, it's a comedy centered around a beauty pageant in Ghana, Africa, and it just sort of addresses the kind of colorism that exists within the African community, and it's a really popular play that's been getting done all around the country.
Well, we'll definitely be talking about some of the other plays later on, because it's a whole year of menu of offerings here. And you can check out the current production of 1984 based on the George Orwell novel, as well as Artist Repertory's full season at artistrep.org. And we'll have the podcast of this interview later on stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Damaso Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining us during this membership drive edition of Stage and Studio, and break legs.
Thanks for having me.
Next up, we have Jessica Wallenfels and Barbie Wu from Portland Playhouse's women's soccer team show, The Wolves. I'm Dimae Roberts. Welcome back to the second half of the special one-hour membership drive edition of Stage and Studio. With me in the KBOO studio are director Jessica Wallenfels. Welcome back.
Hi, Dimae. Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you. And actress Barbie Wu, first-timer. Hey,
thank you.
I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have known you a couple years, but it's great to, you know, finally have you officially on Stage and Studio. You're both from The Wolves, a play by Sarah Delap, and it's getting its premiere September 25th, so it's coming up through October 20th at Portland Playhouse, and it's a timely Pulitzer Prize finalist play focusing on a young female soccer team. And Jessica, when I read about the Wolves, which I assume is the name of the soccer team.
That's correct.
I got excited because the thought of the stage turned into an indoor soccer field, which I'm looking forward to, with a group of diverse actresses seems like something really pretty exciting.
So true. I have to give a shout out to our scenic designer, Kay Blankenship, because she's got some surprises in store for you and for audiences who come and see the show. It's the play is such a beautiful blend of realism and not realism
and theatricality.
Yes. And it's a really fun line to jump across many times because there is a lot of heightened movement in the show, but the language is almost Mammoth-esque.
And really? So the girls do swear, which we're not going to do here.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, and they have it is like.
They're tough, though.
They're totally tough.
They're totally tough.
Yeah. This play passes the Bechdel test and how, right? We really get to see them. It's like being a fly on the wall of a 16 and 17-year-old conversation in the locker room.
In modern day.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so this is very contemporary.
Very.
Yeah, so Portland Playhouse is being turned into a soccer field, essentially?
That's right, yeah. Wow. And like I say, it's sort of a theatrical soccer field.
Sure, because there's only so much space.
Right, yeah. But I can tell you, you've not seen the Playhouse like this before, and we are using all of the space.
Yeah, that sounds so exciting.
Yes.
Well, you know, for both of you, what did you both think of the play when you first read or heard about it? Barbie, you want to take that on, when you just heard about this play with women soccer players?
Yeah, I was just really excited about the fact that there are like 10 women in one show together. This is my first time to ever be.
Have you ever been in an all-female production?
Absolutely not. This is my first time. So it's really exciting to feel the energy of like camaraderie, even though like the show is not exactly about camaraderie at times. You feel very supported by the cast. We have a stellar cast. Like everyone is working so hard to make it happen. And our design team is just absolutely brilliant.
I don't know. There's something about, you know, I've been in, I think only one all-female production, and it just, there's something just sort of relaxing about it. Like, I don't know what it is, but it's almost like the power dynamics are so much more even, you know? I don't know. How does that feel to you? Since this is your first time with women in the production?
I mean, like, it's so interesting because the script is talking about how the girls are very competitive with each other, but there's no ego in the room. Everyone just feels like they're so grateful to be there. So it's such a nurturing and generous space.
I think also, do you feel like you're heard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was what I felt like. I was actually heard, you know? And I think all the women in the production felt like they were heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely what I aspire to, or one of the many things. And we also have one male on our team.
Yeah.
Well, in our room, I should say. There are men on our design team, but in our rehearsal room, we have one man who is our stage manager.
The amazing David Levine.
Yeah, but that changes.
Yes.
That doesn't really change the overall dynamic when women are in the majority, right?
Totally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is what you're saying about being heard, because some people have talked about that and also found that to be true, that it is a different kind of being seen and heard.
Have you done an all-female production? I think you have, haven't you?
Have I?
I don't know. Have you? Either an actor or as
no,
a director?
I don't think.
Is this the first time for you?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
I think so. I don't think I've really like parsed it out like that before, but there is something wonderful about it. We've joked about how we're sort of unconsciously writing additional scenes, or the actors are, because they sit around and talk about things in the way that the soccer players sit around and talk about very personal things.
Well, locker rooms, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Barbie, have you ever played soccer before?
No, I'm actually not a very athletic person. I think I broke the school record for how slow you can run for 100 meters. So, yeah, just growing up in Taiwan, I was not, like, we didn't really have, like, a lot of sports teams, but I was definitely, like, the black sheep in my family, not being able to run.
So do you feel more buff than ever?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like I can do
like
triathletes
camp, right?
Right now, you know, like, just the really intense warm-up, but, like, it's just, like, core building that
Jessica.
Well,
how intense is the warm-up? Oh, she sighs.
This is the longest warm-up that Jessica has ever choreographed, and it's
true.
It's so fun.
Oh, it's on stage, the warm-up.
Yeah, okay. I mean, like, a part of the warm-up is going to be part of the show, but some of our core, like, abs workout, workout is just part of our daily warm-up process.
Well, I understand ensemble member Kaylee Rhodes is actually a soccer expert, a mm-hmm. soccer player, and she's been drilling mm-hmm. all the actresses.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. What are these drills?
Well, thank goodness for Kaylee Rhodes, because she, like you said, really knows soccer, and so she's been able to fill in all the gaps where I'm looking at it from the macro movement standpoint. She's done ball clinics. I mean, we went out on the field and practiced all different kinds of plays and ball handling. And it's something that we revisit and really work at, because people are coming from all different perspectives, right? We want them to look at least passably believable as soccer players. And she is fierce.
Oh, wow.
Fierce. And she's really whipped this cast into shape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, we haven't really discussed the story of the play. Can you briefly sum up, you know, these are 9 young American women on stage, and one is a soccer mom played by Maureen Porter.
That's
what's
right.
the story?
Yeah, 10 altogether, 9 women on the team plus soccer mom. Well, the story is, basically, like I said, you're kind of a fly on the wall or a peek inside a teenage girl's sort of hearts and minds as they are working with identity formation as 16 and 17 year olds. What's going to happen? Will they be recruited for a college program? Will they not be? Will they be injured and their lives go a totally different way? And they're also just discussing these sort of fundamental, huge philosophical questions that have confronted and confounded humankind for centuries, like, why is there evil in the world?
That's a big topic.
Why is there genocide?
Wow.
And they're trying to do it from within their literal bubble, as Sarah Delap writes in the preface to the play. It's like they're inside an air dome. And they are deep in suburbia, and they are trying to think about, you know, the Cambodian genocide or detention at the border. And they're really struggling to make sense of it. And they're also just young women who are finding themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe Barbie, you can speak to it from inside.
Yeah, I feel like it also deals with the social hierarchy within the wolf pack. You know, they're called the wolves, and with teenage girls, like, you're always looking for, like, the queen bee, the alpha, you know, so it's just the dynamic between the two alphas in the show and how they try to both be leaders and be harmonious at the same time.
Wow, so much more to sort of unpack in the wolf pack right now, but we're going to come back to this, because I also want to talk about women's empowerment through sports too, particularly, you know, with soccer. I'm Demay Roberts, and I'm back in the final moments of our one-hour membership drive edition of Stage and Studio. Show your support, 1-877-500-5266. Show your support for arts coverage. Here with me are artist Jessica Wallenfels, who is the director of The Wolves, and actor Barbie Wu, who is in The Wolves by Sarah Delap at Portland Playhouse. And it's about a young female soccer team. Hey, what's your best cheer for KBOO and arts coverage? Go team!
Yeah.
Support the arts! No.
Get to the theater!
Well, you know, I really do love the idea of women's empowerment through sports, and especially with women's soccer. It's been in the news, I mean, of late, particularly around pay disparity.
Absolutely.
And getting the respect that's deserved. I mean, actually, the USA is the best women's soccer team in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And yet they get like a quarter of what the men get who haven't won any championships.
It's so disturbing.
Yeah.
It's so disturbing. And I think that there's such a double standard in terms of, we love to watch our women's soccer team, but we don't want to pay them. And I think that plays like The Wolves are going to help kind of humanize these faces and people, and show that we're raising our young women to believe that they don't deserve as much as their male counterparts. And it's 2019. That needs to change. And there's never been a better time to really bring that to light through theater.
Do any of the soccer players in The Wolves have those aspirations to go professional?
They do, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's part of what creates a lot of the competition and the stress and the conflict
between
them.
Does your character want to be a professional soccer player?
Yeah, I think most of the players in the team are trying to have that goal. But, I mean, like, it's so interesting with soccer because there is a performative aspect of it. So you can be a really great soccer player, but if you don't really want to be seen, like, it can create a really huge barrier.
Seen
for you.
As far as like...
like if you're not flashy on the field, you know, if you're not really like have... It's almost like, so you think you can dance, like you kind of have to have a big personality.
Right.
You can, you know, like connect with the people that are cheering
for you.
You
have to be a star
you.
Of some
yeah,
sort.
You have to.
And
yeah,
you have to play to the crowds.
Right. You have to
but
be
if you're
bold
shyer,
and confident.
Right. You just want to play.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there is that pressure. Jessica, I know you're also a choreographer, so I'm as well as a director, so I'm assuming you're choreographing the heck out of this.
Well, like I said, it's really been a team effort with Kaylee Rhodes and her expertise, which is not my skill set. So it's been just a fabulous collaboration to be able to work so seamlessly with her. She's a super talented choreographer in her own right. And I feel like we've been able to fill in each other's gaps and... it's been so fun to bring the level of athleticism and demand to this language and really try to ask our actors to juggle both of those at a very, very high level.
To connect the words with the movement.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. And we've definitely taken a lot of risks in our production in terms of pushing that level of physicality with the language and the storytelling and seeing if we can juggle all of those balls at once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Barbie, the actress must be exhausted after a rehearsal.
We're pretty sore.
I mean, it's like it's working out, right?
Yeah.
For four
yeah.
hours or however yeah. long the rehearsal time is.
Yeah, but it's exactly what Jessica said, like we want to look convincing as soccer players.
Yeah.
So it's not like you always want to be fit or like be athletic if you can as an actor, and it's just this one is really heightens that task for
do you feel like
us.
You could play soccer now?
Maybe a little bit. Probably not, like I don't think I can go to futsal. I feel like they would just slaughter me, but
Barbie and I shared a ball phobia.
Yeah.
At the
oh
outset.
To be hit like for instance dodgeball. Can we talk about how awful that is?
Right.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
But I was so afraid of the ball, I was actually pretty good at it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Like, I wanted nothing to do with that ball. So.
Yeah, I just wanted to get hit so I could get out of the game. It's like, please, hit me. I'm out. I'm not into it at all. Yeah, I understand ball phobia, mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah.
yeah.
So you got over that, Barbie,
yeah,
right?
I'm in the
process. In the process. Well, you know, I'm wondering, you know, talking about process at this stage of rehearsal, because you have some time before you open. It's open September 25th. Where, you know, what are your favorite moments of The Wolves right now for you, Barbie, at this stage of rehearsal?
I think I really love there's like one in the middle part of our show where I really need to convince the players to be on my side and just focus on what's ahead, which is a team that's undefeatable and we have been losing to them for years, and this is kind of like I'm channeling my Abby Wambach, like just really like
that's
yes,
your character
Wolf
name
back. No
oh, is that a sports
soccer
person?
Player
yeah. You see how out of it I am.
It's okay
we're
all learning.
Abby Wambach is amazing, and yeah, like she wrote this book Wolfpack that's really about like the female soccer team, the national team, and yeah, I'm really trying to channel her into like, come on, join me, be with me, like don't be afraid, and just focus on what we can do together as a team.
How about you, Jessica? What's your favorite moments right now as the director?
Yeah, there are many moments that I find really moving in rehearsal, and they usually have to do with the courage that it takes to overcome adversity. So either when the team is falling apart and then they find a way to come back together through their shared love of the game and of winning, or when a person is falling apart and they are able to use their athleticism and their body to kind of regain faith in themselves, or at least use it as a tether to the larger world if that gets lost. So
I always think about representation on stage, and I also think about who can come to see themselves represented. Is this a play that young women, you know, I don't know what the age range, could come to with their families or just with other girls?
Without a doubt.
What age do you think?
I would say 13.
13 and up?
Yeah.
Because it seems to me it would be empowering for girls in the audience to say, whoa.
Yes.
You know? I mean, it's one thing to see it represented on film or television. That's a whole nother deal. But when you see somebody up close and personal, these are real people, mm-hmm. right? Performing right in front of you. That can be so moving
Absolutely.
And inspirational.
I really hope that it is. And even the age diversity in our cast kind of goes from 21 to upper end of early 30s.
And, which is still young, come
which
on.
Which is still super young. But you know what's amazing is even within that pool, I see a lot of mentorship going on that I find so moving in terms of being a young woman in this incredibly challenging industry. And I think one of the things that this show really has to offer is just a really powerhouse group of young women who are intricately working together in a way that's going to floor you.
Wow. How about you? What do you think about young women watching you playing soccer?
I think hopefully they will be inspired to play better than me.
or just play just
yeah,
in general
just
or do
play.
Something else
yeah.
that's challenging.
We actually have a pro soccer player come in to talk to us. She is the co-founder of Women Ball 2, and she's phenomenal, and just hearing her talk was super exciting.
Yes, because shout out Corinne Tokai.
Yeah, she's incredible. Yeah. Like just the all the superstitions that the soccer players have, or like she really gave us a lot of insights about how soccer players are. So I feel like this show is really for, I mean, any young boy or young girl that's of an age where they can handle a little bit of harsh language. It's really not that bad. Like one of our best friends' children have seen me in Magellanica and everybody, and I mean, like they're 9 and 11, and
oh wow,
yeah. And they really enjoy live theater.
Well, I'm excited because it's rare, and I was thinking about that. There are countless plays about men in baseball or basketball or hockey and even bowling, you know. Mm-hmm. But how many plays are there about women in sports?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially something very athletic like this. So it's really cool on many levels.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it was really interesting, actually, the way that we all relate to being competitive sort of came out in the very first.
Well, let's face it, women are competitive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But
exactly.
We have to hide it.
I was going to say, yeah. We've been taught yeah. to be ashamed of it.
Because you can't, it's seen as being, you know, not cool. Right.
Yeah.
Unfeminine.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think mm-hmm. the play cultivates not only that that's true, it's okay. Sometimes it can be great. Sometimes it can
be
bad.
It's okay to be competitive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It
right.
just is what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, director Jessica Wallenfels and actor Barbie Wu from The Wolves by Sarah Dunlap, thank you for joining me today. I'm going to give more information, but thank you. You
thank
know,
you so thank you so much.
And break legs. Oh, I don't know. Is there a good luck thing in soccer that people say? I don't know.
I don't know.
Break legs.
I mean, like, don't fail.
Kill them.
Okay. There you go. Go Wolves. So Portland Playhouse presents The Wolves September 25th through October 20th. All shows are at 602 Northeast Prescott Street in Portland. See Portland Playhouse turned into a soccer field. More info at portlandplayhouse.org, and I'll have the podcast of this interview at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And final chance to get a pair of tickets to The Wolves and other theaters for a KBOO membership by calling 1-877-500-5266. And that's it for Stage and Studio. I'm Dima Roberts, and wishing you happy membership journey.